From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, January 29th, 2021. The Maine CDC is reporting 359 new cases of COVID-19 in Maine today, with three more people with the disease having died. As of today, more than 102,000 people have received a first dose of the vaccine, and more than 34,000 have gotten both shots. Republican Senator Susan Collins says she is not giving up on the effort to censure former President Trump for allegedly inciting a riot at the Capitol January 6th. But as Mel Leary reports, Collins acknowledges the censure measure may not even come up for a vote.
Collins says she's working with Virginia Democrat Tim Kaine in drafting the censure resolution that they hope to offer next week. She says there will not be the two-thirds vote in the Senate needed to convict Trump on the impeachment charges. And censure is the only way to hold him accountable.
I think there should be a condemnation of that activity by President Trump.
Collins says the Democratic Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer of New York, has said he will not bring up the censure motion in the Senate before the trial. She says it's possible to introduce a censure motion after the trial, but doubts there would be the votes to do so. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And Waterville's Colby College has received $30 million to launch an artificial intelligence institute on its campus. In a virtual announcement yesterday, President David Green said the new gift will be used to hire several new faculty to incorporate artificial intelligence and machine learning into several disciplines, including computer science, government, and literature.
They will also be in fields such as sociology, where the application of AI tools will better help us understand and predict global immigration trends and their impact.
The institute's set to launch this fall, and the Southern Maine Landlord Association is suing to block Portland from implementing a rent control measure voted into place last November. The Press-Herald reports the association claims the new rules are unfair as they create the possibility for more tenants to sit on the rent board than landlords. That board's expected to review landlord requests to raise rent. The board was established under a new ordinance that generally limits rent increases for most landlords in the city. The rent board is expected to be established next month. Enrollment in Maine's public schools fell by about 4% this fall, leaving many districts worried about how that could affect their state funding levels. Initial projections released from the state this week have eased some of those concerns, but local officials say they will still be forced to make some tough budget decisions in the months ahead. Robbie Feinberg has more.
Over the last year, the Oxford Hills School District saw its enrollment drop by more than 200 students, almost a 10% decline. That had Superintendent Rick Colpitz bracing for bad news when initial state funding projections were released earlier this week.
Our best guess was that we were anticipating a 10% reduction in state funding. And so to come back in and find out that it was really about a 2.5% reduction, we feel like we've done okay.
It was a similar story for districts that have seen their student numbers shrink as more parents turn to homeschooling or keeping younger children at home during the pandemic. Maine Education Commissioner Pender Macon says the state has taken several steps to try to stabilize school funding next year as they grapple with the effects of the pandemic. They include lowering the student-to-teacher ratio in the state's school funding formula, which Macon says will help prevent dramatic changes in funding as compared to previous years.
Looking at all of those numbers, this does appear fair and balanced as possible under these circumstances, but that should not diminish the struggle of any school district that was hoping for or expecting more money, and they somehow get less.
Macon adds that the projections are also based on Governor Janet Mills' proposed biennial budget, which, if passed, would increase school funding overall and keep many districts' budgets relatively stable. Local superintendents say they appreciate that continued support from the state, but say they still face difficult budget decisions.
I believe this is going to be our toughest budget year, without question.
Andrew Carlton is the superintendent of RSU 4, located east of Lewiston, which saw a sizable enrollment drop this fall, leading to a state funding decline of about $700,000. Carlton says that's going to be a tough pill to swallow in his mostly rural district, which is without a large tax base.
You know, it's going to be difficult. We're looking at everything. Ultimately, you know, our big goal is to maintain our current level of programming for our students. But I think, you know, we're going to have to get really creative.
Maine schools did receive more than $180 million in federal aid earlier this month, but that can only be used to cover pandemic-related expenses, such as purchases of PPE or the hiring of more staff to support students who've fallen behind. South Portland Superintendent Ken Cunin says he's hoping federal lawmakers can also pass new legislation that provides funding for states and municipalities, which would help stabilize school budgets over the next few years.
Stabilizing our states and our cities will in the long run be what really helps schools have a stable source of funding and just predictability.
And while Governor Mills has pledged to increase school funding as part of her budget proposal, state lawmakers will ultimately have their say on spending priorities over the next few months. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Despite his defeat in the November election and his role in the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, former President Donald Trump appears to be hardening his control of the Republican Party. That's true in Maine, where the state GOP condemned the violence that took place earlier this month, but still remains firmly in the grip of the one-term president who stoked the riot with false claims about a stolen election. All this has left Republicans who have long identified with the party but who don't support Trump wondering if they can still call the GOP home. Our chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, today provides some reporting around this fallout in his weekly Political Pulse newsletter, and he is here now to talk about what he's found. Steve, the lead item in the newsletter today highlights two former state Republican senators, Kevin Ray and Roger Cates. Both of them are lifelong Republicans whose identities are closely linked to their party affiliation. Yet Ray and Cates have been outspoken in their opposition to the former president, and now both are facing retribution for announcing their support for President Joe Biden last fall. What is going on?
Yeah, sure, Nora. I mean, first, I want to provide a little bit of background about Kevin Ray and Roger Cates, because as you mentioned, both of these men are lifelong Republicans. And Kevin Ray told me he first attended his first GOP convention in 1978. And he didn't miss another one, or didn't miss one until 2016, which, of course, was the year Trump won the Republican presidential nomination. Ray would go on to work for former U.S. Senator Olympia Snowe and later became the Maine Senate president in 2011. And he was generally known as a strong conservative, but he was also pretty pragmatic in the sense he was, you know, he was willing to work with Democrats. And Cates is of a similar mold. You know, he's a lifelong Republican. His father was a Republican, and he remembers attending a parade in 1954 for Dwight Eisenhower. Both of these men have been pretty vocal about what they view as Trump's threat, not just to the GOP, but also the country. And that's what prompted them to write a column in the Bangor Daily News last fall announcing that they would support Joe Biden for president.
And we saw this all over the country. They were definitely not the only Republicans who announced they would support Joe Biden last year.
That's correct. In fact, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Joe Biden is our president, in part because Republicans crossed over and voted for him. Now, we don't have a lot of data to illustrate exactly how many people did that, but we can say with certainty that split ticket voters were ascendant this year, and at a time when a lot of political observers were basically writing them off as relics of another time.
And these two former Republican senators have drawn a lot of ire from Trump supporters, right?
That's right, Nora. So earlier this month, the Waldo County GOP, which is one of 16 Republican county committees, passed a resolution that attempts to censor Kevin Ray and Roger Cates. If I can, I'd like to read you just part of this resolution that it passed. It says, Roger Cates and Kevin Ray publicly and willfully allowed their personal opinions to support Democrat Joe Biden for president in the 2020 election, thereby giving the impression that their support was a credible decision for other Republicans to follow their belief, end quote. So what they're saying here is by speaking their mind, Cates and Ray essentially gave permission for other Republicans to take a similar vote against Trump. In other words, these two Republicans are being censored for expressing their opinion and not showing fealty to Trump.
So ironically here then, Cates and Ray have been basically canceled by members of their own party.
That's right, which is interesting given that Trump Republicans in particular have made so-called cancel culture out to be some sort of threat to the Republic, right? I mean, I don't want to overstate the magnitude of this resolution, but, you know, for example, if Cates and Ray wanted to run for office, you know, again, they could do that, and this document would likely have no legal standing. But it's illustrative of the fact that Trump activists remain firmly in control of these local county committees. They're loyal to Trump, and they're seeking retribution against Republicans who don't think or vote like they do. I'll also add that this type of stuff is happening all over the country. This week, the Oregon GOP ratified its own resolution that condemned the 10 Republicans in the U.S. House that voted to impeach Trump for his role in the January 6th insurrection. And it even went so far as to call that riot a false flag event perpetrated not by Trump supporters, but by leftist agitators. There's, of course, tons of evidence to the contrary and none to their claim. Now, and also, I should add that the Arizona Republican Party passed a similar resolution and is even going after its Republican governor because he apparently made the mistake of certifying the results of a free and fair election. Now, the main Republican Party hasn't taken these kind of steps, at least publicly, but it's pretty clear that the party is still very much in Trump's corner.
So if you're a Republican now, you may have a lot of questions about the future of your party.
Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, intra-party fights are pretty typical in political parties because there's often an activist or populist wing that's butting up against what you might call the governing wing. I mean, you saw this during the Tea Party uprising between 2010 and 2013. And also, I would say, even in the Democratic Party between establishment Democrats and progressives who are inspired by people like Bernie Sanders. What's different here, though, is that the GOP's populist wing is tying itself to a one-term president who is no longer in office, who will soon be on trial in the Senate for inciting an insurrection, and yet has no plans to relinquish control of the party to potential successors. And that raises a lot of questions for Republicans who don't pledge fealty to Trump. They're basically wondering if they can somehow take the party back or even remain Republicans. And that's precisely the questions that, you know, Republicans like Kevin Ray and Roger Cates are asking themselves right now. And I can tell you that they're looking for answers, but finding precious few.
And that's Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler. Thanks a lot, Steve.
My pleasure, Nora.
And you can read the Political Pulse newsletter at mainpublic.org/pulse or subscribe so it's delivered to your email weekly on Fridays. And that's today's Maine News. You can find more stories online at mainpublic.org. Have a good weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.